Ben Fred Fridays presented by Henderson and Watercutty. See their progress of what they've made with the website, what they can do to offer all the help that you may need at stlcriminaldefense.com. No matter how big, how small, stlcriminaldefense.com with the offense, and they are available for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Ben, away we go on a Ben Fred Friday. Always good to visit with you, and nice to visit in person as we're on location this Friday morning at MAC West, Missouri Athletic Club.
Always good to see your face, and glad to be here and glad to do this. We do this like once a year. I feel like we should do it more often.
We should do it more often in person, because then I can hold you accountable instead of just being on the phone.
And I can hold you accountable for when you start to put on your Homer pants, and and we can, you know, it's a good give and take.
Well, that's I do have a little Homerism in me. We'll get to that in just a moment. I had been touting Mike Schilt, as we always try to look back at the week that was and week ahead and weekend at lies ahead, but I've been really touting Mike Schilt as the manager of the year, and you know this, for a while. He got that award. What did you think?
I was, A, thrilled for Schilt that he would have had my vote. I did not vote in that award. I had rookie of the year this year, but had campaigned for Schilt to some of the national writers who had been into St. Louis toward the end of the season as the conversation, you know how it is. I mean, you're in the clubhouse, and some of the national guys are there, and you're talking around different awards. And everybody at the time was saying Craig Counsell. Totally deserving. Craig Counsell was what that team did after Christian Yelich was hurt, was amazing. But I told those guys, I said, look, I get it, but look at the full body of work here. And look at the team that, you know, is likely going to win the division, which is important in the most competitive league, most competitive division in baseball. The fact that the Cardinals went from most errors in the league to least, the fewest, in 1 year, which had never been done before in recorded baseball history. You had the fact that, you know, the top five rotation ERA, top five bullpen ERA, the offense was the offense. That Schilt wasn't the one up there swinging. What the Cardinals did on the base paths, I thought it was impressive. I mean, more impressive body of work season long than any other manager. The other thing was, too, is look at what the Cardinals did. They reclaimed the division. They rewrited their rivalry with the Cubs. And I thought these were all things that when you put them into the bucket, that, you know, there's no stat for managing. We have to kind of look at things across the board and ups and downs and things the team's improved on. And the other thing I really thought, and I tried to stress to these guys, was he got no help from the outside once the season started. Nothing. Not one player at the trade deadline, nothing after spring training. And that's managing, taking the internal options and putting them in the best place. And I think Craig Counsell would have been a deserving winner, but I would have voted for Schilt. And I'm not surprised that he won it, but I'm glad that people were willing to look at the full body of work there and not just the fireworks of what the Brewers did without Christian Yelich, which was amazing. But also, I think what the Cardinals did was just as amazing when you look at it.
I wonder if this will start a trend in baseball. And I also brought up this point on many of the games where you go with guys that have managed or coached in the minor leagues as young as baseball is getting to dealing with younger players and dealing with teaching at the level that they have to teach at now at the major league level, more so now than ever before, because guys are rushed to the big leagues. I mean, we've seen that in Atlanta. We're seeing that clearly now with Mike Schilt. And also the fact that he never played professional ball, and here he is, the first one to win the manager of the year, where people will say, we can go outside the box. Maybe the coaches need to have had that experience for the time that they need to have one-on-one with a player, but maybe the manager is a guy that we're looking at more as a X's and O's type guy and dealing with people as opposed to teaching exactly the nuances of a major league game and what a major league player has to go through. I just wonder if that'll buck the trend a little bit.
There's so much development now that happens at that highest level, and you know that's something that I've heard a lot of the old timers talk about. Is when it used to be that when guys came up, they knew what to do in every situation, and they knew, you know, how to they knew how to play the professional game. And now the talent is so great, and there's such an emphasis on young, controllable talent that if a guy has the raw ability, more times than not, he's going to be there and be relied upon. So you better have guys who know how to nurture that talent, but also develop it, harden it, you know, make it so that these guys are becoming major leaguers on the fly as opposed to paying their dues so much along the way. I mean, look at Juan Soto, and no one can say that he's not a major league player. I mean, look at the gifts that he has. Does he have things to learn? Absolutely. look at Ronald Acuña Jr. I mean, what a talent that this young man is, and made some decisions, some mistakes in that series against the Cardinals that just had you going, man, how is he so good, but he doesn't know when to run hard. And it's not because he doesn't care about the game. It's not because he's trying to big time anybody. He's got a flair, a swagger, but he just hasn't learned these things. I mean, those are the things that in years past you learn, you do in Double A, and you know, you don't play for 3 days and then you learn. He's learning on the fly. So if you're going to put those guys in that position, you better have coaches, managers around them who know how to help lead them through this process. When you think about what Shildt just did, first manager to win Manager of the Year without playing in the majors, that's remarkable. Also means there's going to be more of those guys coming. And I think the idea that you, if you played, you automatically have some sort of advantage. You probably know certain things, but there can also be strength then in not knowing. And there can be, you know, you can't tell me that Mike Shildt doesn't have a chip on his shoulder, doesn't have a work ethic that knows I've got to prove to these guys that I belong. And I think he's done that. Now, he's earned a lot of respect for a guy who hasn't played in the majors. He's inched his way up from scout. And that players and coaches alike respect that. So I think experience managing is important. I don't know that the level is all that different. And Shildt tells a great story about this. When he was managing in the minors, Texas League, I think, and La Russa, Tony La Russa came down to see him. And Shildt's told this story multiple times, but it's a good one. Tony shows up and says, hey, you know, I want to take you out to dinner. I want to see how you're doing. You know, let's talk. And, you know, how's it going? And Shildt kind of made an offhand comment like, well, you know, it's not like what you're doing. And La Russa stopped him. And he said, the only thing that changes what I'm doing is more people are paying attention. And I think that really stuck with Shildt, and it should stick with everybody. The game's the game. Pressure changes, expectations change, money changes. Those things add some wrinkles. But if you know how to manage, you know how to manage.
STLCriminalDefense.com, bringing you Ben Fred Fridays on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Henderson and Watercutty, our sponsor on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. I want to get into Wainwright coming back. I mean, it was kind of funny. I laughed at it when I heard that, well, he wants to play another year. Okay, figured that was coming. But sure. Then, you know, he'll look at other teams. No, he's not. It's not going to happen. No surprise to see Adam Wainwright coming back. We'll start with him. What'd you think?
Well, yeah, the idea of Adam Wainwright leveraging the Cardinals to go anywhere, I thought was, I got a chuckle because I know he didn't want to leave, and the Cardinals weren't going to let him leave.
No chance.
I mean, this was like...
It ain't going to happen.
This would be, I'm trying to think of a comparison here. It would be like, Stan Musial saying, "Oh, I'm going to go play for another team." No, you weren't, Stan.
Yeah.
And that's why he's one of the reasons he's beloved. I think Wainwright proved to himself that, look, he had the year he wanted to have. He had that chip on his shoulder. He wanted to prove this was not, you know, who he had been in recent seasons was not who he is, and he proved that. He almost proved it so much so that he thought, okay, I've got more left. I think he really convinced himself of that. He's got this awesome relationship with Jack Flaherty where it's kind of reignited. Not that he was never competitive, but I think it's resharpened him to some degree. And he feels like he's got gas left in the tank. Now, who knows how it will play out? I mean, you just don't know with an arm that old. But if he's healthy and he's in, he's in his zone, look at what he did in September. I think it's smart. It's not like they're paying him a king's salary there. It's actually the same amount of money. He gets more guaranteed. But ideally, the Cardinals and him both hope he max out the incentives. I thought they might have to give him more. And they did give him more guaranteed. But to have him close to a similar deal, I thought it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, no-brainer. I found it interesting in your colleague, Derek Gould, at the GM meetings came out with a report on Yadier Molina saying that maybe he wants to play through 2022. So you're talking 2020. 21, 22. That's three more years. We've already seen Carson Kelly. He gone. And then you got Andrew Kisner.
Kisner see that headline and start packing his bags?
Oh, my goodness. And then, they have a young guy that they had the Arizona Fall League that they love that really had a great Arizona Fall League young catcher. It's wonderful that he wants to continue to play, and I still think there's a lot left in the tank, especially defensively. He's still elite. But this will be interesting how it plays out.
It will be, and Yadi is probably going to play as long as he wants to, as long as he's not a liability, and he's not a liability. His offense as good this year as he wanted it to be? No, that's pretty much every Cardinal except for Colton Wong. I think he, I don't think the Cardinals just give him whatever he wants, but he's gonna, if he wants to play, he's gonna play as long as he's healthy. You know how that looks. I think they'll talk more about that at spring training. You know, I'd be hesitant to offer him an extension without having to, just because of because of the age factor and the fact that you don't know. Do you want to make him mad? Do you want him to feel slighted? Absolutely not. But it wasn't that long ago that Yadi was saying he was going to retire at the end of that contract. So his projection seems to kind of change based off of the time of the year. So I would just think long and hard before you commit money that you don't have to. And I would see really what he feels at spring training. You know, this has the potential to be a really cool season because it could be Wainwright and Molina's last year together. Although Yadi keeps wanting to push the finish line back, I think you do right by Molina within a certain extent. And at some point, if Kisner is proving that he's the better player, then you have to be, you know, it's a business, as the Cardinals often remind us. However, certain guys, as the Cardinals have shown, get certain leeway, and Yadier Molina is going to be one of those guys. So my question was, if you're going to commit to that, then go get something for Kisner. I mean, if you're gonna keep pushing Molina and saying that, you know, he's gonna be your catcher year after year, then don't let these guys rust and decrease their value behind him. They traded Carson Kelly for that reason. They probably traded him too late. He had a good season this year for his standards out in Arizona, but you don't want to hold on to these guys too long if you're just gonna go back to the well with Molina. There's nothing wrong with that, but go get something for these guys behind him.
In my mind, if it ended today, Yadier Molina is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so, I think so too.
So I'm a homer, okay. But I've seen him play just about every
one
of
get,
his.
We got to get Jeff Passan and yeah. Keith Law on here to duke it out.
Don't get me started. So I've seen him play the majority of his games. I see the impact that he makes, whether or not teams run, how he controls a pitching staff, all the intangibles that may not show up in the stats. If he plays three more years, so that would take him through 40, age 40. Then I think it all but assures that he goes in the Hall of Fame. And I'm not sure that's why he does it. I think he does it because he loves to play the game and he's competitive and he thinks that they can win. So in terms of the Hall of Fame, where are you with Yadier Molina right now?
Well, I think I guess there's no sense in saying he's in now because you never know what happens. But I think he's on that path, and I think he would be in. I think this idea that he's not going to get in, or that he's got to prove that he's got to get in, is going to be laughed at when he does get in, because I think still, and the voting body is changing, it's becoming younger, it's becoming guys who are more in tune to the analytics that maybe put a question mark, but I still think there's just so much respect for him in the game that it's not going to be that big of an argument. I think it's going to be happen pretty soon. It's pretty much as soon as he's ready, as soon as he's eligible to get in. When you look at, you know, it used to be his offense wasn't good enough, and then his offense got better, and then it was okay, well, you know, he doesn't have, you know, his defense has slipped up a little bit, and it seems like the guys who think he's not going to make it are always moving the target a little bit. If you talk to Hall of Famers, they refer to him as a Hall of Famer. If you talk to pitchers and what he means, I think longevity at that position is so critical. You just look at innings played. You look at what some of the guys who are in from that era have said. And the more he plays, the more those numbers stack up. It's not like it's going to be an offensive outlier. He will not be an offensive outlier at that position. He really won't. I mean, when Johnny Bench is saying that you're on the right track, then I don't really know who else would know better than yeah. Johnny Bench. And everybody, I think, thinks that it's like a St. Louis dome thing where you have to think Yadier Molina is a Hall of Famer, you know, if you live in this area. Although, to me, I think it will get to the point where the people who don't think he is are the ones who took that stance really early and have refused to acknowledge it or update it or change it or have pivoted on it. I don't think it's going to be that close. And I don't think it's contingent on him playing three more years either. If he wants to do that, find a way to make it. And I don't know that it's always – I don't know that you can keep doing Yadier Molina starts a kajillion innings a season, especially if you're going to try to hold on to, you know, a guy like Kisner. You've got to start figuring out a way to use this guy if he's going to be around. If he's not, get rid of him, keep plugging Yadi in there and let him fight Father Time. But I don't think it's about him being in the Hall of Fame, because I think he's going to get in, even if he retired at the end of this contract.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
I think it's really interesting, too. Speaking of Cardinal catchers, this time next month, we'll know about Ted Simmons. Yeah. And he was one vote shy in the previous Veterans Committee trying to take a look at whether or not Ted should be in. And anybody that listens to our games on Fox Midwest knows how much I tout Ted. And I give, I think, a compelling argument that are more than just some of the stats that you might find by just Google. The guy should be in my mind. Now, there are some that say, well, he wasn't the defensive player of others in that era. I
get it. Reverse Molina.
Yeah, but man.
One of the two, right? You can't be against both of them getting in.
But he could flat out hit.
Yeah.
And I think you got to take in the fact that he was durable on the turf.
Oh, yeah.
On the hot summer days in St. Louis and played 150-plus games year after year after year. Switch hitter. I mean, all those things. I hope he gets in. I think he should, and I guess we'll find out shortly enough.
One of the coolest things for me covering the Cardinals is to go to the game, and you get in the press box, and you're going up to the press box, and you look over, and, oh, my God, there's Ted Simmons. And he's scouting, and you would he walks in there as if he's writing for some paper. I mean, he's not big-headed. He's not. There's no ego. He's just a unique guy. But having the chance to talk to him a little bit, I mean, it would mean a lot to him. He's not going to go beat the drum. He's not going to go on a public campaign. That's not his style. But it would mean a ton for a lot of guys. But I think because he's so, you've seen some guys make this public run for it, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Tim Raines got in part, I think, because they campaigned. He's not going to do that.
No.
But it's on people who understand what he did to campaign for him. You've done a great job of that. I just look at the numbers, man. I mean, look at the Hall of Fame
and
catchers.
And look at when he retired and those numbers, too, and where he was with catchers.
Just look at the WAR. I mean, wins above replacement
right.
is a pretty good stat. We all say, okay, more or less, you might nitpick it a little bit at times, but it means something. Look at the Hall of Go just do this at home. Go to the Hall of Fame catchers. Look up their names. Write them all down. Put their WAR next to them, their career WAR. And then go put Ted Simmons at the bottom of the page and see where he fits in that group.
Yeah.
It's the simplest. It's the most. That is
well,
the easiest way to look at how crazy it is that he's not in by now.
You ever do a blind resume? I love doing those.
Right.
Same deal.
What is it? I mean, there are other good catchers around that time. Okay. You know, I'm not necessarily one of these guys who thinks there can only be one Hall of Fame player in each class. I don't buy that. That's completely, it's in some ways disrespectful to the guy. You can have, what if you had two of the best catchers of all time play at the same time?
Right.
So only one of them gets, it doesn't make sense. I mean, his offense at the position was astounding, and his WAR was amazing. I think he is going to – I think it'll be the year. One vote last year would have got him in, and the ballot hasn't changed all that much. We need to see, find out more about who's on the panel. You know, all those things kind of matter. But you wondered last year with La Russa being on if it would get in, got close. But, man, for him to be back on, it hasn't changed that much. It certainly feels like it'd be the right time.
You had a great thought-provoking article as we switch gears with Ben Fredrickson. And, again, this is presented by Henderson and Watercutty. Check out their website, stlcriminaldefense.com, stlcriminaldefense.com, available 24/7 on Barry Odom. Whether he should stay or whether he should go. Mizzou's got three games left. Couple are winnable. Couple look that they should be winnable. I said that about a few games this year, and they didn't win.
Oh, yeah.
This is crunch time, man. This is really a crucial time for the Missouri football program and for Barry Odom.
Yeah, this was not supposed to be the season where people are sitting around and the hottest topic about Missouri football is the coach coming back or not. And whether you think you should or shouldn't, that's the topic right now. When I talk to people about Missouri football, that's what they want to talk about. It wasn't supposed to be that narrative this year. This was supposed to be the year where Mizzou either made a point of sticking it to the NCAA by winning a ton of games and not being able to play in a bowl game, or it was supposed to be the year where they got their postseason ban overturned and really had a high watermark with a quarterback who was only going to be there for 1 year. They've had some things not break their way. Kelly Bryant hasn't been healthy. I don't know. You know, you wonder how much of it was that knee that he banged up in the Troy game. He played probably his best game of the season after that against Ole Miss. And then he's looked, you know, like a shell of himself. Even, you know, before he pulled his hamstring at Kentucky. They say he's going to be back for the Florida game, so we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, Missouri's been beaten by a backup quarterback at Vanderbilt. It's been beaten by a receiver playing quarterback at Kentucky. The quarterback who leads Florida into this game, Kyle Trask, is a backup. Felipe Franks was injured early in the season. Good teams find a way. And with Missouri, when its quarterback on the ropes has just kind of shut down. They lost Cale Garrett, their best linebacker, early in the season. I think that's affected them a lot more than we realized at the time. And they just haven't found a way to come up with new guys who've helped kind of step in roles. They don't have a go-to receiver. Albert O has been disappointing. Their run game has been disappointing. Their offensive line has been disappointing. Their defense has been, I think, you know, better against Georgia, but tons of silly penalties, just not disciplined, not winning football. And it's bigger than just the quarterback being out. If that's the one guy who dictates your whole season, then that's not how it should be. So I think what Jim Sterk has to decide is, how much of this is quarterback related? How much of this is that the right standards are not in place in the program? And he's got three games to kind of sort through this. And there's going to be a ton of changes this offseason in the SEC and college football at large. I don't know that it's the kind of year Missouri wants to jump in and do a coaching search, because it doesn't have the dollars to try to compete with some of those teams that are going to be hiring coaches. I like Barry Odom a lot. And I know that he wants to win more than anybody who would ever have that job at Missouri. But I do think, as Jim Sterk, the athletic director who didn't hire Barry Odom, then at year four, you have to say, okay, this was supposed to be a 9-10 win season. It wasn't that. Why is that? And what proof is there that it will be able to be a top 25 team? Because that's what Jim Sterk has said from the day he came to Columbia. I want a top 25 football team. Missouri's gotten there twice. Once in each of the past two seasons, they've lost the next game, and it hasn't come back. So that's the question, is does Jim Sterk, has he seen enough in year four to feel like he can get to what he wants to have in a program? And if not, then what is the benefit of more time versus making a move?
What's your gut feeling?
I think he'll be back because, you know, I think they can – they'll get one more win, and, you know, Arkansas's dreadful. They've already fired their coach. I don't think Missouri can you never say never with this team, but I think that they'll probably find a way to win that game. If not, then I'm not sure. But it's hard for Missouri to fire a coach after a bowl season, even if it's a lowly bowl season, simply because of the fact that it's not Florida State. It's not, you know, a Texas A&M, which goes and gets Jimbo Fisher. And for all the fans who want to holler about, you know, more time or make a change, then – you know, the AD should turn back at those fans and say, you don't come to games. You know, you're not given the kind of donations for a buyout that they're given at Florida State. So you have to have more realistic expectations. But the one thing that has to be considered here is it's a business. Kim Anderson, everybody loved him. I think he's a great guy. But it got to a point where they were losing money from the basketball program. People weren't showing up. If there's not financial support, attendance, concessions, then it becomes a business decision. And I'm eager to see, interested to see what that crowd looks like against that Florida game. It's going to be cold, but that's a ranked team coming into your stadium. You'd expect to have a decent atmosphere. And I wonder, you know, if Jim Stirk's going to be looking at those attendance totals, wondering if that's going to influence his decision some.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Final topic. Speaking of ranked teams coming to town, Seton Hall will be taking on SLU Sunday. I'm excited about this SLU team. Now, the competition has been great. Florida Gulf Coast, Valparaiso. A couple of nights ago, they beat up on Eastern Washington, who is predicted to win the Big Sky. What I am excited about, so I take it with a grain of salt when you go 3-0. Uri Collins.
Yeah.
I love watching that kid play. The fact that Goodwin is back. Hassan French is back. You know, they're averaging 84 points a game while shooting 51% from the free throw line. So it very well could be 90 to 95 a game. I think it's a more entertaining brand of basketball that they're playing. It's up and down the entire floor. And you got Seton Hall coming Sunday, number 12 team in the country. I'd love to see that place packed, get the atmosphere, and Travis Ford is doing everything he can to try to get fannies in the seats. He does a great job with the kids and the school. I love what he's doing. Having said all that, I'm just interested to see how good the Billikens are, and this will be a hell of a test on Sunday.
It's too bad he can't shoot free throws for them.
Travis, he would be awesome.
Travis is one of the best free throw shooters of all time in college basketball.
Right.
And I would wish if maybe you could do this for the broadcast on Fox Sports West, just get one of those heart rate trackers on him when his team goes to the free throw line. I can't figure this out. I love watching this team play. They defend their tails off. Goodwin is so versatile. He can go down low. He has the onions for big moments. French is a physical freak. I mean, he should be playing tight end in the NFL when he's done with college basketball. I really believe that. And they've got some guys now who can shoot the three, which they didn't have last year. They're the worst 3-point shooting team in the country last year, and teams just packed it down against them. You saw it because they didn't have a threat. Now they've got some guys who can hit that three. Collins is really fun to watch. Great assists. He has a court vision, so they got a lot working for him. But they're going to lose big game, plural, big games if they can't get better at the free throw line. It's not just a Hassan French problem. He's been dreadful, but he's always been dreadful. A lot of big guys struggle at the free throw line. They have guards who miss free throws. They have not had one player who has made every free throw he shot. Even the guy who shot one has missed. I don't understand it. I know it drives Travis crazy. He almost like doesn't like to talk about it because he feels like it's like a jinx. But I don't know if you have to have like a 2-day camp, like where they only shoot free throws. I don't know if you have to make them shoot a bazillion after I don't know what the answer is, but this is 2 years now where they really struggled there, and it's kind of silly, but it's going to cost them games. It cost them last season, and it's hard to believe that it's that hard for this whole. It's almost like it's contagious. So they got to figure that out. But they're 3-0, and they know it's a problem. But it's nice to talk about it when it's not when it hasn't killed them yet. It will if they don't find a way to get it better. As far as the team as a whole, I've got a chance to watch them play once. If they can get their defense to match their new kind of revived up tempo, not up tempo offense, but just they have a better offensive look now. It was a rock fight so often last year. Now they got some shooters. If they can get their defensive intensity to match that for a full game and stop kind of doing these second half lulls, they'll be a tournament team. I really think that. And Goodwin and French are playing like seniors. They've got some good new blood in there and some excitement in Yuri Collins. It's a fun team to watch. They are not they're not lacking in effort. And they get a chance with Seton Hall to make a statement. Missouri missed its chance to make a statement. They went to Xavier. They had a really good Xavier team on the ropes. They battled through a deficit. They got the lead. They lost it. They lost in overtime. Decent win, decent loss on the road to a top 21 team. Xavier, St. Louis has a chance against Seton Hall to do what Missouri didn't do against Xavier, get an impact win early in your season. They've got some good non-conference games. Boston College is on there, Auburn, Kansas State. If they can get a win against a ranked team in non-conference, that really, really helps their chance to make the tournament, no matter what happens in the A-10 tournament this year.
In terms of, and I'll wrap it up with this, in terms of the game on Sunday, how important is this game, you think, for their program, just because the non-conference is so tough?
Yeah.
You know the A-10 is up this year.
Yep.
So if you can win against a team like this, what does it say about your program where you're at in year four for Travis Ford?
It's huge, and that's that game that really jumps out when you're comparing resumes in March. If you lose that game, then it's not only is it a missed opportunity, but it's a home loss. And that's something that always, I feel like, hurts teams. You don't want to, if you're going to lose that game, you lose it on the neutral court or on the road. You don't want to lose that one at home. That's the one you want to win. That's the one when the committee looks and says, okay, you know, what did SLU do? Okay, they finished here in the tournament. Well, the conference was up this year. And okay, well, this was their conference record. Well, what did they do before that? You know, people have almost forgotten about it. It'll be that nice, shiny win on your resume. Good time to strike, too, because Seton Hall's without one of their better players, which that happens. You got to take advantage of that during the course of the season. So Chaffetz should be rocking. That place has so much potential. And I wasn't here, you know, covering the team when the Majerus era was in full effect. I've only heard the stories and seen the highlights of what it can be like. But, man, it should be loud. And this team deserves a crowd that gets fired up. I think the student section at SLU is awesome. And they deserve a special shout out because it's so you turn on games this year and you look around and, you know, you can go to games where the student section is spotty or it shows up late. I mean, these guys show up early. They're loud. They've got their cutouts. They're crazy. Ford has a great, you know, Ford feeds them. He thanks them in the student newsletter after games. I mean, there's a relationship there that if they can get an arena that kind of matches the energy of that student section to, like, give me 25% of that energy, then it'll be a threatening place for teams to come in and play.
Great stuff, as always. Thanks,
man.
Ben.
Good to see you.
You too.